There is a pretty remarkable exhibit that's in its closing weeks at the Honolulu Museum of Art. There's history in it. There's diplomacy in it. Links among past, present, and future. HPR's Noe Tanigawa here with a bit of context on that, Noe.
Right. Thanks, Bill. And I'm so glad you got to see it over the weekend.
Yes,
just
absolutely.
A couple more weekends left. So that's why we're talking about Ho'oulu Hawaii, the King Kalakaua era that's continuing at the Honolulu Museum through January 27th. You know, it's a terrific thing when you wander through and realize Hawaii was the first non-European nation to ever be recognized by the world. I mean, that happened a long time ago. Hawaii, we were recognized by England and France in 1843. That was followed by the U.S. and 80 other countries. And one thing this show does is really point out the kind of stature that Hawaii had.
And those connections. Yeah.
Exactly. I took a tour of some of those artifacts with Iolani Palace historian and docent educator Zita Cup Choi. I only wish I could share more of it with you because she described Honolulu in 1874 so well. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a couple of great paintings there,
yes,
right,
there
Bill?
Are.
Yeah, and they do depict the era that Honolulu was a place that you could make money. People felt it when they came through. There were a lot of possibilities, a lot of open land. Travelers through the port town were impressed, even amazed by what they might have seen at the palace. It was fully electrified. And Zita Cup Choi says, you know, it made an impression.
Sometimes I think Hawaii was more connected to the world than we are now, in spite of all our modern telecommunications. Because people going to Asia, Australia, people going to the Americas, both North and South America, from Asia and Australia, had to pass through Honolulu. And as they passed through, they were giving us updates. And Kalakaua and his predecessors were stealing ideas.
It was a lot of rough and tumble jostling for position and power on the docks all the way up through the plantations and around the palace as well. After Lunalilo's abruptly short reign, David Kalakaua became king in 1874 through a vote in the legislature, even though it was clear at the time that the popular favorite would have been Queen Emma. According to historian, archivist at the State Archives there, Ron Williams, Jr., it was his election and the way he was elected that colored the first years of Kalakaua's reign.
He came to power kind of trying to have to prove himself. And he did that by aligning himself with those who were kind of on the rise in power, which was the Americans in Hawaii. He was a landowner himself, so he was making money on sugar and so forth and so forth. There comes a moment, and this is my interpretation, there comes a moment when I think he started to understand, these guys are getting so powerful, they don't necessarily need me anymore. And that's when, you know, you see this shift, and you see this intense nationalism and this intense patriotism coming out of that point. I think he was a very pragmatic man, and I think he saw the writing on the wall and then became intensely nationalistic.
Yeah, people have seen these two sides of him, you know, and wondered about it. This gives us some explanation. In the 19th century, you know, it was kind of derogatory to call Kalakaua the Merry Monarch because it kind of insinuated that he was irresponsible. Mm. But Cup Choi says her research shows the king's engagements were really pointed, really intentional. In an extended interview that's available online, I hope you'll check it out, Williams lists some of his diplomatic achievements and the various ways that Kalakaua did lift Hawaii's global profile way beyond our size, right? Somehow people had this impression of us. Fascinating, because William also describes, Bill, the continuing criticism that Kalakaua faced at home. Mm. And, you know, he discusses it. I mean, some of that criticism had merit. But we wonder, you know, what about Kalakaua the man? Certainly his queen, Kapiolani, was a great solace to him. Zita Cup Choi says that theirs was a love match.
That must have been terrible for her because he went to California. He was expected back in late January. You know, he's coming home. He's coming home. There were stuff all over the place, parties. The regent, Liliuokalani, had sent out invitations. Her Royal Highness, Princess Liliuokalani, regent, to invite you to a ball to be held on the evening of Kalakaua's return. And no cable, no phone, no satellite. And Lighthouse Charlie called the phone company, the Charleston, the flags are at half-mast. The yards draped in black.
And that is how word spread, Bill, that Hawaii's King Kalakaua had passed away. He died in the Palace Hotel in San Francisco in 1891. And was so much ahead for the kingdom after that, right?
Yeah, and it's 128 years now since death. Wow. Uh-huh. That idea also, Williams describes his pragmatic nature. Mm. And you see that among other aspects of this exhibit, you really see illustrations of that and how that pragmatism is brought to the kingdom, and whether that's technology, you refer to the electricity, the telephones, the telephone from the king's boathouse is part of the exhibit.
There's so many aspects that lend color to the period, and I really love imagining how Hawaiian citizens felt about themselves and their connections to the world. Mm. And then from Zita and from Ron, I get this picture of the great respect that other nations held for Hawaii. Interestingly, Ron, in that extended interview, points out that Hawaii was much better treated by other nations than by the U.S., which was having racial problems of its own that lapped over into its relationship with Hawaii, really. I mean, Williams takes this further and talks about how all the alliances that the king built in that world tour really were not there as the support he had planned when, after the Spanish-American War broke out and the United States again became interested in
Hawaii. But, of course, that that trip also highlights on so many places that he went. Stop. Penang in what is now Malaysia, Cairo. There's a lot, and there's a lot more to this story. And mm-hmm. so, for listeners, I urge you to go online and find more.
There's one more event coming up. It's the evening before the show closes. Mm. It's January 26th by the Pa'i Foundation there at the Honolulu Museum of Art. You might want to check that out. And as you do, think about what Hawaii's profile is today. Internationally, maybe beyond that of the U.S.
Nui Tanigawa, thanks so much. She's our arts and culture reporter here at HPR. You can hear her full story on HawaiiPublicRadio.org.